practicing. 3, 2, 1. Good afternoon. Today is Friday, April the 12th, 111th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Humboldt Bay Fire Department Chief Ken Wood. See, I got it right.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, You know, all you have to do is be stupid once or twice a year, and all of a sudden...
It was more than once or twice I had to correct you.
A year.
Oh.
No, each show is a year.
We're already into the fourth month.
Well, right. Oh, I see. You're saying I'm an overachiever this year. Good. Well, the gauntlet has been thrown down, and we'll see if we're both stupid or just me when we come back.
See how it goes.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and information time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. But before we do, our quote this afternoon... Masters round two, I guess.
How relevant is that?
The little guy shot, what, a 74, I think, today, the 14-year-old. And had a stroke assessed for slow pay. Slow play. Sorry. The bag's out of the cat now.
Slow pay.
Slow play. First time in 3 years it had been assessed.
Wow.
And they put it on
the little guys?
Put it on the 14-year-old.
That's tough.
The judge said, "Oh, I do it again." Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, he might get a few letters on that.
Yeah, I think so. Or a couple 8-irons up the head. Right. Our quote this afternoon comes from Sam Snead. To be consistently effective, you must put a certain distance between yourself and what happens to you on the golf course. This is not indifference; it's detachment. I would imagine you guys do that too. You pull up and,
all the time.
If you know who the people are.
Well, sometimes.
You got to make an overt effort to try to separate and take care of biz the way it needs to be taken care of.
Depending on what's burning, you may want to do that. Absolutely. Right. And we do.
Learned or trained?
Both. You know, it's basic training, but you do learn it when you're out there, when you have events that... escalate quickly and you put yourself in a bad situation and, you learn from it. And all of our firefighters have had those experiences when they've, maybe crossed the line a little bit, gone a little bit too far, and they learn from it. And those kind of lessons get passed on to others. So they're very important and they save lives.
In a small community where there's a percentage of the team that has grown up here, and they know people, who know people or know of the family names, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is it that the service rendered is different or not to par?
I wouldn't say necessarily different. There's definitely a different relationship. It's much more personal from that aspect. But no, I don't think it's different. I think when you're providing a quality service, it's going to be no matter who it is. It doesn't make any difference for our guys. Customer service is our motto and what we strive for every day. And, a lot of our firefighters are, as you say, grew up here. They know a lot in the community. It's a small community. They have a lot of ties. And it just makes it more personal.
Both sides of the sword.
Yes.
Yeah.
It does.
So when somebody is in that kind of situation, do you change assignments? because of that?
Not really.
If you're the incident commander,
yeah, you really don't have the time to make that kind of assessment, nor necessarily do you know. Once in a while, maybe there will be a connection there, and you have the opportunity to quickly change. But in the normal 99% of the time, you don't. And the firefighters are professional. They deal with the incident. They're very capable at separating the personal side from the need to get the job done. And sometimes afterwards, it has a different impact and a different effect on them. But during the call, no, really, really not at all. And that's the real amazing part with the kind of people we have is they're very capable at focusing on the issue at hand, whether it's a fire, whether it's a medical, a car wreck, getting the job done, taking care of the victim, and then we'll deal with the other stuff from there, what comes from it.
You must have quite a training program. I can't imagine. If I rolled up to a scene and knew the people, whether it was fire or medical or whatever, yeah, I've been in the house before. I know where the kids' rooms are.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Am I treating that different?
Yeah.
Straight up right now, absolutely.
No, I think
that's cool.
The way we train, the way we develop our folks, and just the kind of people that the fire service attracts are ones that they are very motivated to get the job done, and they are interested in making the quickest, the biggest impact for anybody. It doesn't make any difference who it is. And yeah, maybe there's something more familiar about it, the personal side, but it doesn't matter who it is. We're still going to do everything we can. And again, those things may hit later on after the call. You realize, oh, this was so-and-so, and I've known, and this really hits home. But they're out there to get your job done, and they do a great job of doing that. So,
how, on the flip side, Ken, do you avoid fatigue? Yeah, another challenge that's out there, if you're – what do you guys go, 24 hours?
48.
Okay, it's even worse. Say you're hour 37.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how do you keep – that was almost a really bad pun. Do you want it?
No, go ahead. All right.
The fire burning.
Yeah, how do you keep the fire burning? Right.
The focus, the attention, the professionalism, all that stuff. Now, granted, it's not sleep deprivation they're necessarily dealing with.
No.
But when you're on call, you're never really sleeping either.
No, you're not. And when we know that crews have been up long periods of time and have been working hard, sometimes we will rotate them. When we have additional resources we bring into the scene, we'll rotate them more quickly. We'll move them in and out, give them a breather as much as we can. Sometimes we don't have that luxury because this is a small community. We have a limited number of resources we can pull from. Sometimes it's just toughing it out. And the guys are going to give it all they can to get the job done again. And frankly, they worry about the fatigue later on, and they know they're going to be going off duty when their 48-hour shift is up. But it's really not an issue for us. We really don't have a huge problem that way. They're able to deal with it, and they do a very good job. And again, it's knowing what the outcome should be and working towards that goal. And, when you're very focused on something, you can overcome a lot of things to see that through and accomplish the goal.
Same true for the administrative team when you guys are doing both ways?
The administrative side is more mental pressure, when you're dealing with a lot of different, not only the personnel side and trying to keep people under control and cared for, but also dealing with the administration. So it makes it tough at times, but doable.
It's 3:19.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. For years, the Eel River was the state's second largest source of steelhead and third largest of salmon. A UC Davis study estimates it once produced more than 1 million fish annually. This has been replaced by unpredictability. Last year saw a good salmon run, but some years it is very small. Several causes are cited, but all agree the Eel River ecosystem has been degraded. Now a task force of volunteers has come together to pinpoint the reasons and work to restore the watershed. The Eel River Task Force consists of public agencies, Indian tribes, conservation organizations, and others committed to establishing a scientific baseline of the causes of the decline and what might be done to reverse it. The members agree, no finger-pointing. A plan of solutions must fulfill legal responsibilities to protect endangered species while also respecting private property rights. It will be a big job, but a healthy Eel River is worthwhile for all Humboldt County. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the betterment of our communities.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 3:24. We're back to, you notice the improved studio clock on the wall, the big boy clock over there.
I know, and is that the budget for the month, or?
Actually, that was 2-3 months worth.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I know. You don't see the genuine Diamondique on there,
do
you?
Well, not from here. Maybe
yeah.
If I get a little closer. And
yeah.
Does it say Timex on it?
Yes, it does.
Oh, wow.
So you passed the at least the 2060 eye chart.
Yeah, that's about it.
And you notice the size of the numerals mean that I was at about 100.
Yeah, very helpful.
Yeah.
Right, good.
Jeez. Bill Panos was in, Rex Bone was in the last five shows talking about community forest.
Right.
I know when I talked to Randy in our kid about community forest. Okay, there's pluses, minuses. It's a profit center. It's a community,
Right.
But when I think of forest, I tend to think of forest fire.
Yeah.
I tend to think of forest management. Yeah.
Us too.
How do you get big trucks down windy roads
exactly.
and not lose them? And so
right.
maybe I'm a little bit more jaundiced from a different perspective. There haven't been that many big fires at Sequoia Park.
No.
There haven't been at Carson Park or,
nope.
or.
Yeah.
So is there really a concern?
There is a concern. There's always concern when you're dealing with fire. Fortunately, because
of course,
of the,
it's right across the street from the station,
well,
too.
That too.
So that'd be the embarrassment factor
the
as well.
The remodeled station.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's all you have sprinklers. But no, you know, it is a concern. And fortunately, again, where we live, because of the climate, we don't have the you know, real high humidity and the make that low humidity and high temperatures where things really take off and burn at the rate where you'll see down in the foothills or those type of places. We still have the potential, though, for north wind, for dry conditions. And you get the right conditions, and we have the opportunity for a very severe fire in that McKay Track area coming across back across Walnut into Cutton.
Is it because there's so much load that's there? And
yeah, absolutely. The potential is there. We do get occasional fires out there primarily from transients who are in the McKay Track. And, you know, we'll get a couple redwood stumps burning and that type of thing. And because it is primarily wet and not a lot of wind, they don't go very far. They are normally contained pretty close to the area of origin. But the potential is absolutely there, and it's a concern for us. The other issues with a forest area that you open up to more and more people are access, which you mentioned for us. How do we get our trucks in there? There's bridges that need to be maintained in order to get the apparatus across and have a level of comfort that they will hold the apparatus. There's medical calls, you know, when people are biking and hiking, and there's the injuries, sprains, falls, all those types of things. So there's a concern for us on a number of different areas, and we want to make sure that we're proactive in talking about those ahead of time and trying to mitigate those as much as possible.
So is that wide roads, wide trails, so that you can get your guys in to where they need to get?
Yeah, not so much necessarily real wide as opposed to normal, but improved road surfaces. For instance, gravel makes a difference, particularly with our rainy conditions. Having vehicles that can get back there. We have a Type 3 engine, which is four-wheel drive, that is, you know, multi-capable to do a number of things. That's our primary response engine into that area. And then when people get back on hiking trails, it's how are you going to get to them? How are you going to get them out? And sometimes maybe it's an ATV type vehicle. Sometimes it's just getting a group of people together to hike back there, and then you're going to pack that person out. So it creates new problems for us.
That's what I was thinking. The apparatus that you normally think of for a fire department.
Right.
You know, maybe you get sexy and you got the fire boat.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't have the fire copter. You don't have the fire motorcycle.
No.
You don't have the fire golf cart, ATV,
yeah.
Segway, all these motorcycle
mm-hmm.
things that you would, you know, if you were a cop, you might be able to say, okay, you could get in with those things. Or if you were in a national park.
Sure.
Okay, that's how they, well, and the official, of course, fire department ski patrol.
Of
yes.
course, right.
You don't have any of those tools being a more urban or metropolitan force, but you would need to. have something? Is that part of this discussion?
It is.
To get you some ATVs that could put somebody on a stretcher on the back?
Yeah, we're looking at those different types of options, you know, and what would be the best. Number one, then what type of access are we going to have? Is it going to be what's there right now? Is it going to be improved? You know, how many miles of trails are going to be out there? How many miles of road? What's the road service? Again, so talking about those up front, letting the powers that be know that what our needs are, and then, you know, working together to try to come up with solutions ahead of time before this all happens and takes place.
So it's in the planning stage at this point. Is it very fluid so that you can talk about, hey, guys, the trails, we need them this dimension, we need them maintained, we need this kind of, boom, boom, boom. Are you kind of at a clean slate at this point?
Yeah, we are, in fact, talking about it. We are have looked at the number of calls we've had back there, the types of calls, and compiled that information, transfer it on to the county then, and then we'll be discussing the specifics of what we need to, again, handle emergencies in that area. Now, anytime, you know, you talk about going into a new area and you're looking at new equipment and where funding comes from to provide that equipment, what's the middle ground? You know, we're not going to have a dozer, as you say, or a helicopter or those items available, but what are the things we can do within the budget constraints to be able to effectively serve the area?
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:30.
Decade of Difference presents a brand new competition, Innovate, a business challenge opportunity to pitch your creative idea. First step, upload a 60 to 90 second elevator pitch highlighting your business venture idea by March 29th. 40 finalists will be selected to move on to phase two. But don't wait! First 100 entries receive a free iTunes gift card. To upload your video and get more information, visit decadeofdifference.org. A grand prize of up to $2,500 will be awarded. Don't wait, innovate.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods from the Humboldt Bay Fire Department. Ken, the discussion or the news story earlier this week came out of Wes Chesbrough's office about the $150, $160, whatever it was for the rural property owners. Now they were going to be doing it differently and hooray, hooray, and that meant that everybody got to pay a third of it.
Yeah.
And I'm in the middle of Eureka going, okay, now wait a minute.
Yeah, this.
We're going to be paying $50 a month with never an opportunity to get any service at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the $50 a month that I could be sending to my favorite yellow, green, red truck
right.
is now going out to just the green trucks for, say, protection and WIAT.
Yeah.
Not that WIAT doesn't deserve protection.
Right.
But why would somebody in Eureka, Arcata, Fortuna have to be paying a surcharge for something that they literally would never be receiving any service from?
Exactly, and that's a big concern for us. And what you're
I'm not off the
to,
beam on.
No, you're okay. You're actually pretty good today. So the
second half of the show, I'm gaining momentum.
You're referring to the ERI, which is the Emergency Response Initiative, and it's a 4.8% surcharge on every property fire property insurance throughout the state. As you know, that SRA fee, which was $150 per habitable structure, was in the state response areas. It wasn't in the cities. And that's in court right now. That was expected to bring in about, I think, $80 million for CAL FIRE. This new initiative would take in about $400 million. And there is no formula yet in the bill as to how that will be divided. And, of course, we are very concerned, local government fire, that we need a portion of that. And, again, we're very concerned that it's all going to go to CAL FIRE, that the local government will be ignored. And particularly in Humboldt County, where you have 41 fire departments, and The vast majority of those are volunteer departments that struggle every day to go out on calls, that do it, you know, because they want to be good community members. They don't get paid anything to do it. And we want to see some of that money come back to not only those agencies particularly, but also ours. Here, the Humboldt Fire District area around the city of Eureka, you know, when there is a vegetation fire, we're the first ones there. We're there ahead of CAL FIRE. CAL FIRE does provide resources. They're further away, and they're not always here during the year. And we want to make sure that we're paid for the services we provide as well. So it's a huge concern. We're going to have to see how this goes, not only with the lawsuit currently on the SRA fee, but also with this ERI, and if it'll get any traction at the state legislature. But it's something that needs to be discussed. Citizens need to be talking to their legislatures about money going to local government, because they're providing the service 365 days a year.
Or I would think if you're in an incorporated area, or was it a sphere of influence? Is that the magic?
Yeah.
So the bubble beyond the city limits a little bit.
Right.
No service. You're just another fee.
Yeah, it is. You're
and, that,
there
and you
no
said that
land.
That's on the fire insurance or property insurance?
Yeah, it's on the property side. And again, CAL FIRE is responsible in those state response areas for vegetation fires. They're not responsible for structure fires, medical calls. And though we have a great relationship with CAL FIRE, they do a great job. We work well together. Yet, you know, that those kind of funds that volunteer departments, again, specifically are struggling to survive, and they need help. And they're providing the service out there every day. We do it as well in the city and around the city of Eureka. And we, you know, we're much better off because we do collect property and sales tax. But again, it's the pie is so big, and we want to make sure that we're able to continue to provide services and that the funding is there to continue to keep this going, and that it's not just another money grab by the state.
So the local volunteer fire department at this, the way it currently sits, wouldn't receive a dime?
Yeah, at this point, there's nothing concrete in the ERI initiative to secure that and you know, divide that up as specific percentages for the local government. That has not been determined. And as you know, with the SRA fee, that went to CAL FIRE for fire prevention services. It didn't go for suppression services. And again, the little local departments, they didn't get anything out of it. They just got hurt by it.
Less money for the pie sales.
Yeah, exactly.
So to speak.
That's it for the bake sales, the pie sales, yeah. The pancake breakfast, all those things.
KINS, News and Information Times, 341. We'll be back with more from Ken Woods.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. So what's been keeping you busy these days?
Well, we've had a couple fire lately, one in McKinleyville, one in Eureka, that was the processing of marijuana into hash oil that resulted in very serious fire, explosion, injury, and it's something that we're seeing more and more of now in the area, and it's a real concern for us where they're using butane to refine the marijuana to produce hash oil. And it's a very volatile situation. So we had, 2 weeks ago, a garage fire where that was taking place. We arrived on scene, had a victim badly burned from the process. numerous explosions going off in the structure from the butane cans. And again, it's a very
serious... Once one goes, then they all start to...
And it essentially blew part of the roof off the structure, a large metal garage door that was blown partway out. And explosions going off. Our firefighters are trying to get in and access the structure while we're having explosions. It's a very dangerous situation for us.
Now, why would you charge into a building that had things exploding from within?
Well, when you still don't know necessarily if anybody's inside. But, again, it's a cost-benefit type operation. And when we have explosions, we do have to hold our people back, and we're going to put water from the outside, a defensive operation, until we cool that structure down and then can go inside. But you don't know until you get inside if anybody is in there.
Well, since you have managed to stay out of the puddle so far, let me see if I can drag you in.
Great.
There.
Great. Thanks. How much time do we have left? Go ahead.
Burning fire. Mm-hmm. Drugs involved. So you've got – yeah, okay. I know there's a little redundant.
Okay.
I could say drug user, and that would probably be redundant also.
Roughly.
Okay. In that scenario, do they deserve to be at the risk of your guys?
Yeah.
Or you say, you guys were playing with the nasty stuff. You got into this one. Things are blowing. I'm sorry. Yeah. You're on your own. Signal at the window if you need help kind of thing.
And we don't know those facts until a lot of times afterwards. When we pull up on scene and we have explosions going off, we don't know necessarily, is it fireworks? Is it butane cans? Is it natural gas? Our job is to save life and property. So that's what we're going to do and make every reasonable attempt to do that. That still keeping in mind the safety of our firefighters. And again, we'll risk a lot to save a lot. But sometimes the structure is so well involved that we can't get in there, and we're going to take a more defensive stance until we can cool it down.
Okay, so you didn't want to jump in the mud puddle, huh?
Fine. Not this time.
the fire that was on up in McKinleyville this morning, anything about that, or just that there was a fire? And
I am not aware of
another
that one,
department.
So, yeah,
okay.
You have better information than I do.
Well, CHP had a report this morning around 8:30 that there was a fire off Hiller.
No, nothing that
railroad,
we saw.
So. Okay. Yeah. Well, or that you had to be involved with.
Right.
That might be
exactly.
A better way. Yeah.
Yeah, either way.
Yeah. So you had a couple of these do-it-yourself chemical plants.
Right.
Going on.
Right.
It seems like we've been hearing a little bit more of the ambulance runs, a little bit more medical.
I think our medical calls are continuing to creep up. And again, as the population gets older, as there's more and more people are relying on the fire department for not just the medical side, but also just what we call service calls, which are pick them up and put them back into bed. They don't know how to turn off their water, come out and turn off their water. You name it, the fire department gets called for
anything
you can think of. Well, a lot of times, you break a pipe and they've never had to deal with that before, and they've got water running down their stairs.
Wouldn't you call the plumber?
Well, they don't. They call the fire department. And,
really?
You talk about response times. We can get there quickly, mitigate the problem, shut the water off before a plumber can get there. And, then they can call the plumber.
You guys charge a couple hundred bucks an hour, too?
Yeah. No, we don't.
Oh.
That's part of the general service we provide. Yeah.
I got my new best bud doing a little sprinkler work this afternoon.
Yeah, just on the side. Yeah. No. But it's... there's more and more of those types of calls that we get constantly every day. And you name it, you think of it, we've been to it. And that's what we're there for. That's part of our mission, is to provide customer service. And we'll do that.
That's what I'm thinking. Maybe that's a reflection that you guys are seen as the good guys by more and more people. And that if there is a question, that you guys have their trust.
Right. I think you're absolutely right. And we want to be the good guys. We want to be able to help. We don't want to do it at the expense of a medical.
20 seconds. The fire guys were held for ransom.
Coup. Bad stuff where that guy took them hostage. Thank goodness they're all okay. But it's always a potential concern that the motives are not what we think they should be when we arrive. And our guys are in danger, and you don't expect it.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Stay safe, man.
Right.
We've been talking shop with Ken Woods. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Let's